Oh, welcome to Friday. Welcome to KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. We're on Twitter at KUOW. We're going to figure out what happened this week, what it all means, with my panel of super friends, Jossie Ross, Seattle attorney, host of the podcast Breakdances with Wolves. Jossie, welcome back.
Thank you.
Chris Van, is it nice?
It's nice to be here.
Good, right?
It's always good to see you. You're handsome.
Thank you.
And I like
just visually,
you.
It's nice for
exactly.
you.
Yeah, exactly.
Sitting across from
right.
me. Thanks
that's,
for that.
That's why I have this line of sight.
I see that. Chris Vance, former Washington State Republican Party chair, no longer a Republican. Welcome.
Good to be here again.
Independent Chris Vance.
Yes.
Good to see you. Justin Farrell, former state representative from the 46th District, the fighting 46th. Great to see you again, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's figure out this week. There's kind of a theme, as you will perceive, as you stay with us all hour, and I know you will. First of all, topic one, if you want to drive into the middle of London at rush hour, you will pay a pretty pence, or maybe a farthing or a pound sterling, possibly a quid. Some kind of British money will be charged to you because London has congestion pricing. Mm. Well, it might happen in Seattle. Not a switch over to the British pound, but congestion pricing might happen in Seattle. Listen to this.
We need to make sure that the traffic in downtown doesn't get so gridlocked, specifically for the buses that accommodate the vast majority of people that are commuting to downtown. If those are stuck in traffic, it'll be catastrophic.
That's Seattle City Council member Mike O'Brien, one of the lawmakers proposing to study the idea of tolling not just 520 or Highway 99, but Seattle surface streets, too. See, the new waterfront tunnel is going to have a toll, and that toll is going to cause some drivers when it opens in 2019. It'll cause some people to spill out onto our already crowded surface streets. Chris Vance, what do you think of London-style congestion pricing in Seattle?
I don't like it. I didn't like it 20 years ago, and I'll get into that. But I am all in favor of using tolls to pay for specific projects. I also believe that as the gas tax withers away, because we're all eventually going to be driving hybrids at some point, that we're going to need to find a new way to pay for transportation, and that's probably going to be tolling and something like where you put a barcode sticker on people's windows and charge them for miles driven. That's fine. But using taxes to change people's behavior is something I've never supported. When I was a member of the King County Council 20 years ago, we shot this idea down.
What do you mean by tolling to change behavior?
That's exactly what it is. Congestion pricing is an attempt to punish you for driving at certain times of the day to try and reduce congestion.
But isn't it a user fee? If you don't want to pay the toll, don't drive in Seattle
yes.
rush hour
yeah,
congestion.
It's not
points.
A user fee designed to raise revenue. It's a user fee designed to reduce congestion. That's why it's called congestion pricing. Again, the region rejected this 20 years ago. And that's the other thing is I'm not sure Seattle can do this without getting approval from the Growth Management Planning Council, the Puget Sound Regional Council, the state of Washington. It's another Seattle idea that Seattle's not an island. They can't just do stuff like this without the region's support.
Justin Farrell, what do you think of congestion pricing? Punishment?
Well,
what'd you call it? Punishment?
It's bludgeoning people,
bludgeoning
their behavior.
It's bludgeoning, Jessen.
I think it's user fees for a high demand time of the day. And when you look at places like London, one of the most important stories from that experiment was climate emissions went down. We are in a climate crisis, and we need to be thinking outside the box around how we deal with transportation emissions if we're going to get on top of this issue. I mean, the hour is very late in terms of climate change. So when I'm thinking about this, I think if we're looking at it as a tool to reduce emissions, it's something that we should put on the table. There are major issues with it. It's, you know, equity around who has to pay. If you live far away outside the city and are having to drive in because you can't afford to live in the city, that's an issue. You can't make any of these decisions around transportation without tightly tying it to the decisions we're making about affordable housing in the city. So I'm open to it, but we need to be looking at those things a lot more holistically.
Jossie, I need you to settle this.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I largely defer to Jessen on transportation. Jessen is an expert, and I appreciate everything she said regarding equity.
Chris Vance, no slouch, by the way.
King County Council,
legislature.
Former chairman of the Transportation Committee.
Let me give you two thoughts, though, real quick.
Go ahead.
The thoughts are this. Number one is regarding exactly what Jessen made remark to, that this is at least the way it looks from a 30,000-foot perspective. Could be a regressive tax and punitive toward the people who can least afford it to be punitive toward them. I have a suspicion that it would be people of a particular demographic that would largely pick up the toll for this. Number two is science is an amazing thing. And it seems like we would want to do things that, as a matter of data, work. if the folks in the council wanted to do something that worked, they wouldn't waste their time with the trolley car that is coming our way. That's stupid. As a matter of science, that's stupid. It doesn't work. It doesn't alleviate congestion. It doesn't move people other than tourists. If you want to get commuters moving, you make more dedicated carpool and bus lanes, metro bus lanes. That's something that's been shown to work in Washington, D.C. and other municipalities. And so all of this beating around the bush is ultimately losing sight, I think, of the target, which is to move people. And we have ways that we know move people, and we're not doing those things.
Agreeing with Jossie on that point is Seattle mayoral candidate Carrie Moon. Listen to this.
Congestion pricing puts too much burden on low-income folks, especially folks who have to drive for work or folks who are not well served by transit because they're in a low-income neighborhood, they don't have political power, they don't have much voice, they don't have transit. We absolutely have to get the transit in place before we can consider something like congestion pricing.
Chris, would there be any way to alleviate that, to somehow means test congestion pricing?
Not that I've ever heard of. And again, this is not a new subject. We studied this extensively at the Puget Sound Regional Council 20 years ago. And the idea is you tax people at certain times of the day for driving on certain roads. You can't. There's no way you can ask them, why are you driving on that road? Did you have an alternative? You just tax people. You put a barcode sticker in everybody's window, and if you drive on a certain place at a certain time, you get a bill.
And but could we get to a world where we only charge the people who don't have a transit option because we know that where they live and where they're going, we can't tech our way out of this?
I don't think you could tech your way out. Beyond that, I'll be a conservative here for a minute. I just don't like the idea of giving the government the power to tell me where and when I can and can and can't drive my car. I mean, we the people paid for those roads, and if we feel like we need to use them, we need to use them. The better solution, for instance, on climate is technology. We need to use carbon capture technology in our power plants. We need to get cleaner burning cars. But using the power of taxation to change people's behavior is just antithetical to me as an American.
Why? I mean, taxation, if you want something, if you want less of something, tax it.
Exactly.
What's wrong with getting the society we want by using taxes?
I don't think the government should have the power to tell me and my family where and when we can drive our vehicles.
You sound like a current Republican. You know, it's analogous to me to the I-732 movement last year, the initiative, the carbon tax, right? And that was something, it was a flat tax, and it was ultimately, I like the ideas of a luxury tax. Luxury tax sounds good, but it should be a tax to those people whom it's a luxury as opposed to something that is required for survival. How do you delineate that? I think that's the question to Chris. I don't know. I don't know if you can tech your way out of deciding who it's a luxury for and who it's a matter of survival for. I'm not sure.
Like if you could prove this was for work, you're driving an Uber, or you have to bring construction equipment with your, you know, gardening equipment, whatever your job is, you can't, it doesn't make sense to be on the bus. Targeting. Yes, Jessica.
Well, I would only say that any system of taxation is a statement of values, right?
No, and in
our
have to be.
Absolutely. And in our state, we have chosen that we're going to tax regular old people instead of the very wealthy. And that happens in our transportation tax system, et cetera. At the same time, I think that people have generally been open to transportation taxes because there's a really clear nexus. You tax me for this gas and I am going to get a new road. You tax me for, you know, these particular things and I'm going to get transit related to it. So I think that there is a tight nexus, but overall we have a really upside down tax system. And while in theory I do like the idea of congestion pricing, I laid that out from a climate change standpoint. There is a very real issue around who is paying that tax and are there other ways to do it?
Yeah,
you cannot divorce values from taxation.
And
you can't.
The difference is when I pay the gas tax or we pay a weight fee or you're tolled for a specific road, it is to pay for the infrastructure, to build and maintain the infrastructure. This is different. Congestion pricing is not intended as a revenue source. It's intended to change people's behavior. And I just don't like that.
Well, I would add, though, that part of the cost of transportation is the cost of carbon and climate change, you know, the whole externality issue. And to the extent that a congestion pricing system is getting at that, I think that's okay. If you're not doing it without it addressing the equity issues, it's not going to work.
Listener Robert seems to agree with Mr. Vance. The state used to place tolls to pay for a specific project cost and remove the tolls when paid.
Right.
Robert says, now it seems we're actually trying to place tolls to force people into another toll.
Yeah.
Here's another idea I want to discuss. How would you like to pay less in gas tax and instead pay for every mile you drive? Why would we do that? Well, the gas tax is bringing in less and less money. As we mentioned, cars are using less gas. Here's Washington Transportation Center's Mark Hallenbeck telling you how pay by mile would work.
I, a public official, look at your odometer once a year. Second thing you can do is have a device kind of like the snapshot that you can get from Progressive, right, where you plug it into your car and it follows you around and reports aggregated statistics. This is how many miles you drove. You can have such a device with a GPS in it. Right. And the GPS knows to stop counting when you leave the state of Washington and say, here are your Washington miles. You can have a smartphone that connects to your car so that it knows that you're walking around downtown aren't miles you're driving. So it has to recognize that it's in the car. It can be more sophisticated. It can actually know what road you're on.
Pay by mile, Jossie. What do you think of that idea?
I think that there's definitely security concerns. I'm one of the people that I blocked the little camera on my phone. I blocked the little camera.
Oh, you put a little piece of tape over it?
Yeah, I do. It's creepy. It's just kind of creepy, you know? And so this right here, I watched Breaking Bad too many times, and I remember how Walt used that transponder on Hank, and I don't want nobody doing it for some ill reasons where they know where I'm going.
What are you hiding, Jossie Ross?
Well, I can't tell you. I'm on the radio.
Right. Good point.
But you know, I think that there are, in light of, you know, the various security breaches that we're seeing right now, and I think there's legitimate security concerns outside of being some paranoid hypochondriac about technology. And I like the idea that it's much more tangible and that you can quantify the miles by virtue of the odometer or by virtue of a transponder or GPS system. But it does trouble me, the security concerns. And I think until there's a satisfactory response to that, irrespective of the ultimate question of what are you trying to hide, that's not the point. It's just, I don't want people to know.
Jessen Farrell, what do you think Jossie Ross is trying to hide?
Well, it's not obvious given the great orange and green shirt he has on.
Halloween
those
season.
Those are not colors that you are hiding behind
true,
when you
true,
wear those.
True. What do you think? Pay
you know,
by mile.
I would say that as a general principle, I'm supportive. The security issues are real. But on the other hand, how do we think Google Maps works, right? It, you know, Google knows where we're going. And that's why we're able to get such great accurate directions when we're hooked into Google Maps. So I think that the privacy issues are already out there and we're way behind the eight ball. It's not just a pilot project that Washington State is going through. I mean, we're way behind that. So I would say we need to wrestle with it and we need to figure that out. But, you know, as we're figuring out how we pay for transportation, this is something that absolutely we should be considering. Again, though, the equity issues are real. If you can buy, you know, a more efficient car, you're not having to pay as much in gas taxes. If you can afford to live in the city, you're not having to pay as much to get to work. You can probably take good transit. So again, all of these transportation issues cannot be separated from housing and how we are trying to make this a city where people can afford to live.
Yeah, regarding where you can afford to live, I got an email from a listener, Misha, who says, when I had a good paying job and lived on Capitol Hill, I had no car. Now I live further out because my wages have gone down. And you politicians have cut bus service to the bone thinking the stupid light rail is going to work for everyone. Newsflash, it does not. Mm. Now I drive a crappy clunker to get to my crappy, undervalued, underpaid, but highly necessary job in the core of the city. I cannot afford pay by mile BS. Fine, I'll live in my car. Maybe then you'll stop taxing me to death.
So this I'm actually okay with. And it's for what I said at the very beginning and what you said when you introduced the subject. We kind of have no choice. We have to have enough revenue to pay for our transportation system. The gas tax is declining as a revenue source as cars become more efficient and more of us drive hybrids. Eventually, America is going to have to find a different way to pay for transportation. We cannot continue to rely on the gas tax. The only thing I can think of is some form of pay-by-mile system. And again, this would be different than congestion pricing. It's not a tax designed to change people's behavior. It's a tax to pay for the system. So I think I'm glad the state's studying this. I don't think they have a choice.
Well, we theoretically, we would tax the rich and pay for roads and not, right? That's one idea, and not charge people by mile. Who Misha is saying when, that Misha says I gotta, you know, time, I can't afford it.
Every time someone says tax the rich, what you mean is an income tax. And there's two problem with that. It's unconstitutional in this state, and the voters have rejected it over and over again. So there's that.
I think, I mean, as a matter of jurisprudence, is absolutely right, Chris. I mean, that it's unconstitutional. However, I think that there are creative ways, and I think we're going to talk about something that would be considered a luxury tax of sorts later on, regarding corporate taxes.
Yeah, we will.
And I think that there's ways to approach it where it's more palatable for people, because here's the punchline to this, is that very, very wealthy people like you, Bill, who have...
Yeah.
All of
that
us have
true.
A vested interest in making sure that the workforce can arrive at work in Seattle, making sure that teachers can arrive at Garfield High School or to Meany or wherever the particular school is. They have a vested interest in making sure that your children get educated. They have a vested interest in making sure that our government workers can arrive down to City Hall. And so for that, it makes sense when it isn't addressed as a punitive thing toward wealthy people, but instead, like, no, this is something that actually helps the city function. I think that that's a better sales pitch. And I think that there's been a marketing concern largely how it's been addressed to voters.
By the way, that Transportation Commission director, Mark Hallenbeck, said that pay by mile, he just pointed out that it would make Seattle housing even more expensive because you're charging people a fee for living far away.
Yeah.
I don't know how big a bump that is, how big an effect.
I think if we ever
be.
Transition to this sort of system, it would probably be in conjunction with eliminating the gas tax or dramatically lowering it. I mean, this has got to, what we're looking for now as a society is a replacement for the gas tax. That's the issue here.
By the way, anybody know what our state gas tax is?
It was 18 point something. I can't remember.
I don't know when that was.
No, it's
it
might
have been 19. That was in 1908.
The federal tax is 18 something. The state's much higher.
Yeah. We have the second highest gas tax in America, 49.4 cents a gallon, second only to Pennsylvania.
And here we are investing in our transportation system.
Yes.
That's how it works.
The state is currently, and people complain about transportation, the state is currently in the middle of the largest transportation expansion in its history. I mean, they're building more new lane miles and more, making more improvements than ever before.
Let's talk about somewhere you might go on one of those roads. This is another user fee that is going up. The National Park Service says it wants to almost triple the entrance fee at America's most frequently visited national parks, which include Mount Rainier and Olympic National Park. By the way, not North Cascades National Park. That's one of America's least visited national parks. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I know that.
Fewer than 29,000 visits per year. But Mount Rainier, Olympic, yes. The peak season fee would go from $25 to $70 to pay for maintenance. Jessen, you said this breaks your heart.
Yeah, this one breaks my heart. You know, I mean, we're in an era of deep division in this country. And I think our national parks are one of those things that we share and should be sharing. And I was at Dungeness Spit this summer with my kids. And one of the delightful things we found out is that fourth graders get a free pass to our national parks.
It's fourth graders?
And their families.
Okay. Yeah.
And,
but just that grade?
Just that great.
Oh, and it's kind of special
and
to
it's
single
Obama,
out one year.
Exactly. And it's an Obama-era effort to get kids into national parks. Mm. We should not be making it harder for people to go enjoy these wonderful, beautiful places that we have so close to us. So I'm heartbroken, and I hope that we don't end up going through with this.
Jossie, heartbroken?
I'm not going to say heartbroken, but it's definitely the same equity issues that you have. People who, you know, you up the price and there are going to be those folks who, irrespective of what the cost is, are going to be able to afford it. And number two, value enough to afford it. That's cool. But as Jessen points out, ultimately the hope is to make it more accessible. And then when you have such environmental, some people might say racism issues, but at least environmental equity issues, where inner city youth, you know, have, you know, this proliferation of asthma and other conditions as a result of pollution and whatnot. And good, get to the outdoors. Get there as much as possible. And this right here is creating a huge disincentive, and possibly it just might be preclusive from certain families being able to experience it. Certain families, once again, would just value it and say, no matter what, if this causes me to take out a loan or have the loan shark come looking after me, that's fine. I'm going to value this. But then there's other people who are going to say that we're just not going to experience this. And that's, I'm not going to say I'm heartbroken, but there might be a little bit mistiness in my eyes.
Mm. I'm not heartbroken. I'm disgusted and angry about this. I mean, look, the federal government is over $20 trillion in debt. And the big cost drivers in our budget are our national defense and Social Security and Medicare and other programs like that. The national parks are a tiny sliver of that. It is budget dust. It is de minimis what we spend on our national parks. But the Republicans and the Trump administration are not willing to deal with any of the big issues like entitlement reform. Instead, they're passing a budget that will pass a huge tax increase to make our debt worse and cutting small domestic discretionary programs like national parks and also big things like Medicaid instead of dealing with these big issues. It is terrible policy. It's cruel and it's stupid.
Well, we'll debate entitlement reform another day, but do you want more people to go to national parks or
yes.
fewer people to go to national
Far
parks?
Far more.
Because you've heard that some of them are being loved to death, right?
That's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should love our national parks and people should be able to go visit them because it's easy and accessible. Transportation, people can get there. People can afford to do it. That's the right problem to have. We should not go in a different direction.
It's as a matter of science. Once again, science is a pretty cool thing. And science, as a matter of science, kids who are regularly exposed to nature, regularly exposed to trees, they do better in school. They have less behavioral issues. Yeah, definitely. Get all those kids. Bring them out there for field trips as many times as you could go. Make it as accessible as possible. There's absolutely no reason other than a sort of a misallocation of funds to justify taking away these sort of programs.
And I would add that, you know, at the state level, we're facing the same problem. Our state park system is really underfunded. And, you know, both Democrats and Republicans are to blame for that.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But this is something that if we really care about this, if we really believe that kids need to be out of doors, that we all need that, that, you know, our natural beauty is something that's iconic to this state, we need to step up and invest as a community, not through user fees.
We've been talking about the National Park Service proposing raising peak fees at its most popular parks, including Mount Rainier and Olympic National Park, $25 up to $70 to pay for maintenance. And the public comment period is open now, and it lasts another less than 30 days. So if we made you care, go public comment, because they're still listening to you. By the way, we were saying before we went on the air, I told you North Cascades, little visited comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked, who gets more visitors, Rainier National Park or Olympic National Park? Chris Vance.
Olympic National Park.
Probably new.
For Olympic National Park for many years, I'm not sure about now, but was the most visited national park.
3 million visitors a year at Olympic National Park, 2 million to Mount Rainier. This is the Week in Review on KUOW Seattle. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the stereotype of the Seattle liberal. Always good for a vote if you're an East Side Republican. And that could be East Side, east of Lake Washington or east of the Cascades. And we'll talk about one of those corporate taxes that we referred to earlier. And we'll talk about whether you would be happy to let Amazon inside your front door while you're not there. Stay tuned. It's Friday, and you've got the Week in Review here on KUOW with former State Representative Jessen Farrell, former State Republican Party Chair Chris Vance, Seattle Attorney Jossie Ross. I'm Bill Radke, and, you know, Seattleites are ridiculous when you look at them from across Lake Washington. That's what Eastside Republicans think. They're in a state Senate campaign right now, a crucial Senate race, an Eastside race, okay? Redmond, Kirkland, Woodinville, Sammamish, 45th District, not Seattle. And yet, listen to this Republican campaign ad in which a parade of Seattle stereotypes with wool caps and hippie beads and hipster glasses all tell you to vote for the Democrat, Monka Dingra.
Hey, East Side. It's Seattle. We don't have enough liberal politicians.
Do Seattle a solid. Send Monka Dingra to the Senate.
Monka Dingra will give us free stuff. I love free stuff.
Who cares about higher card tab fees? The cars.
Higher taxes, bigger government? Oh, yeah.
Monka Dingra is Seattle sophisticated, not like those East Side soccer moms.
Seattle?
Did you count? Did you catch all the Seattle stereotypes and make sure if you're following along, you had a bicyclist saying F the cars. You had the Lenin statue in there. Nice touch. You had a Sean Massawant button. Why don't we like soccer moms?
I wanted more references to arugula in that.
Yeah. Seattle is full of soccer moms, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's soccer is big here.
And by the way, the Democrat, Monka Dingra, responded, among other things, I'm a proud East Side soccer mom, by the way. We love free stuff, said the aging hippie, which I guess is that like a welfare reference or something? What's the we love free stuff? You speak Republican.
Yeah, that is the welfare reference. It's people who don't want to, you know, it's the takers, not the makers, that kind of rhetoric from Republicans.
Except who's the welfare recipient? Seattle or everybody but Seattle?
Yeah, I got a kick out of that one in particular because, you know, they love our taxes. They love our tax money. So I didn't get that free stuff thing because, you know, we look at the McCleary solution that just happened and whose taxes went up? Central Puget Sound. And where did that money go? The rest of the state. And quite frankly, I think if you ask most people in Seattle, we're okay with that. You know, I think there's a real ethic of we're all in this together. And, you know, I don't think that's so offensive. But what I thought was, you know, refreshing maybe about this ad is that the Republicans have a sense of humor. I thought that they sat around in rooms, you know, cooking up ways to roll back women's health care and environmental regulations. But there's a little satire. So,
OK, it's still kicking, Chris.
Yeah. So
your former party, by the way.
Yeah, I've got several reactions to this. First of all, any smart campaign. You don't just put an ad on the air, you poll it to make sure it's going to work. So, but I really have a hard time believing that this message works on the East Side. Now, if this race was happening in Ellensburg, yeah, then it would work. But Redmond is like 5 minutes from here. The culture on the East Side is not all that different than Seattle. Suburban voters, especially East Side voters, do not hate Seattle. They love Seattle. They love to come downtown. They work downtown. They you know, you ask somebody where you're from, they say Seattle. And we, when I was state party chairman, we did poll this, and this message did not work in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. I suspect this is just Susan Hutchinson and her team over there.
She's the current state Republican chair.
This is them talking to their own base. This is how Republicans think of Seattle. And it's more, you know, like self-gratification and ego boosting to say they're running this ad than anything that actually makes any political sense.
You hear that, Susan Hutchinson? Come on, KUOW, and react to that.
Republicans need urban voters to come back to them. And I don't believe this message. Like I said, I think this message would work in other parts of the country. I don't think it's going to work in the 45th district. And the other thing that bothers me is there's always been an element to conservatism to emphasize cultural issues. We Republicans have always liked to claim that the other side is flat out not patriotic. They burn the flag. They smoke marijuana. They do blah, 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 all this stuff. That's always been part of it. Now it's the centerpiece of what it means to be a Republican. It's all culture. It's all about attacking fellow Americans for who and what they are rather than about decent public policy. That's what the Trump Republican Party is all about, and that's really what this ad reflects.
So it's okay to tie Seattle to its hippie stereotypes, but don't Democrats also tie Republicans to Trump
absolutely.
Every chance they get.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I don't
see Democrats running ads making fun of rural people.
If I went to and Justin went to a whole bunch, some of the early mayoral day debates, and I'm listening to Jenny Durkin's talking points, I would think that she was running against Trump. You know, and like that, I think that's a valid point that there's sort of this straw man proxy war that's going on. And I'm not saying it's effective or honest in either sense, in either capacity. However, it does happen. Mm-hmm. It does happen both places. I actually thought it was something. I wish there was a more honest conversation as opposed to just caricatures, because I think there are certain things. Matter of fact, a lot of things about Seattle's very, very self-congratulatory, self-patting itself on the back liberal culture that should be critiqued. and should be critiqued from a very broad level. And I think that you
What's an example? What do you see Seattleites doing?
Well, I mean, if we look up at 23rd and Jackson, we see a lot of homages to the African-American community that used to be there. And we see homages to that culture that we'll put a museum here and we'll commemorate a particular group of people and talk about them in those debates or whether in talking points from the Seattle Times or KUOW or wherever. But we won't actually support policies that make living here, actually living here, existing here, staying inside the parameters of Seattle possible. We do that all the time. I recently spoke. I was the keynote speaker and an amazingly handsome keynote speaker, too.
That is true.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I'm just a reflection of you, Bill.
Well, that's just science.
You're right. Right.
Like fact.
That's right. But for Seattle's Indigenous Peoples Day, shout out to Matt Remley. He's one of the organizers who helped create that day and make it a real thing. But I'm standing there at City Hall and there's all these amazing Native people, Indigenous people there at City Hall. And we're celebrating a day. However, the city of Seattle was not in any way supportive of keeping open the Indian Heritage High School that was up there on North 85th Street. It was not in any way supportive of supporting Daybreak Star, United Indians of All Tribes Foundation, Seattle Indian Health Board. And so we let these institutions go away and we'll make monuments and totems to the memory of those people that used to be there. That's a perfect example of liberal Seattle hypocrisy.
So that's a fair stereotype.
I'm saying that I wish these went outside of the caricatures and actually talked about things that there's a lot of critiques that we have to have as we see the economy changing within Seattle. But I thought that those were, it was cool, but they should have actually went into the meat of some things that Seattleites should be critiqued about.
Chris, you mentioned you don't see Democratic ads mocking rural
people.
That would be seen as punching down, whereas an ad mocking Seattle people right now, Seattle's having a heyday and it's seen as afflicting the comfortable.
Well, I don't see it that way. I think that this ad is just exactly in line with the Trump administration and Donald Trump's campaign, and that's what it is, to keep alive this issue about the national anthem and the NFL. It's an attempt to culturally divide Americans, us versus them, and anger the Republican Party's base, that the other side is weird and out of step and not American. And so I don't think it has anything to do with Seattle being successful. I think it's dividing people. And I think it's terrible.
Knute Berger told me it's also because we make the state pay for parks on top of our freeways out here and a tunnel under our waterfront instead of something cheaper, and we refuse to pay for the Bertha tunneling machine cost overruns. And he thought we deserved arguable knocks for that. Other stereotypes in the ad, we have hipster beards, we have earlobe rings, we wear black bandanas for surviving pepper spray, we carry a man purse when we're not carrying a tablet. And women have gray hair. This is something that Maria Semple in Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Made fun of Seattle because Seattle women have gray hair. Apparently, I don't know, maybe in the east side it's not done or something.
Maybe we shouldn't focus on how women look.
Well, there you go.
How about that?
Okay. Well, this ad focused on many, 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 many things. You can go and try and find them all. Okay. Any other stereotypes about Seattle that are valid before we go?
Well, of course, Seattle is dramatically out of step with the rest of the state culturally and politically. That's true. That's absolutely true. But to me, that's not the point here. It's, you know, a political campaign should be about issues and what you're going to do in office and solid policy proposals. And pretty much the entire Republican Party right now is nothing but dog whistling issues about cultural stuff. I think it's terrible for our democracy.
That's former Republican Chris Vance, who wants to have a debate with Susan Hutchison, I think.
Anytime.
Chris Vance, Jessen Farrell, Jossie Ross. We're going to come right back and talk about taxing the big Seattle companies. Bartell Drugs didn't like this particular version of the idea. And Amazon wants to walk right into your home. Stand by. You You know, this is KOW's Week in Review. We cover the big news stories, especially locally, regionally. I wish you could also hear all of our off-air conversation, because we sometimes talk about stick bugs, and apparently Mauritius is a fantastic place to go.
The bizarre foods. Now, granted, I'm a food guy. We can go eat some good, you know, Thai food afterwards. And and I was watching Bizarre Foods, and they made the food look really, really good. It's a, you know, cosmopolitan place. People all over the world, from India, from East Asia, from Africa, and there's all these cuisines that are blended. And it's just freaking beautiful. So I want to go. Yeah.
And it turns out Justin Farrell is also super into Mauritius.
Because my seven-year-old is. He is totally into Mauritius. So
how'd that happen?
Justin.
Looking at a map of the world and came upon that.
Way to go. We're going to do a remote broadcast of Week in Review from this island nation in the Indian Ocean. So stay tuned for that. But first, we got to finish up this week's Week in Review with Jossie and Chris and Jessen. I'm Bill Radke. Here's an idea to help Seattleites who cannot afford a home. A new tax on big businesses. Mm. City Council member Mike O'Brien wants to pay for homelessness programs, affordable housing, too, with an annual $100 tax on every employee working at big revenue businesses like Amazon and Starbucks. O'Brien says a head tax of this kind would not make Amazon leave. Mm-hmm. Seattle is not being hard on business.
What makes Seattle a thriving business environment is not that we have the cheapest real estate in the world. It's not that we have the most business-friendly regulations. The reason that businesses choose to live here and the ones that do come here thrive is because we have an environment where the types of workers they need to make their business successful want to live. It's a diverse city. It's got a lot of culture activity going on. It's environmentally beautiful, and we spend money to preserve that. And it's a place, frankly, that people think of as being equitable, not where there's mansions and yachts and thousands of people.
But an Amazon employee who says, you know, I only want to go work for Amazon in a city that has income equity. Is that really how they a company attracts workers?
I think when someone looks at a city like Seattle, they want to be here in part because of what they see on the ground and in part because they want to be in a city that feels fair. And I do, you know, we hear a lot from high-tech workers that say, we love being in Seattle. I know, you know, these folks come and testify all the time. I'm one of those Amazon workers. I'm making good money. I should pay a little more to make this city fair. It's not fair that the older lady down the street is property taxes going up while I'm kicking her out of the community because I'm pricing her out.
Okay, that's Democrat Mike O'Brien of Seattle. You know who's shaking his head listening to this is recent Republican Chris Vance. O'Brien is wrong. He's saying Seattle businesses are happy to pay to be in such a great city.
You know, I'm no longer a Republican. People say, why don't you become a Democrat? That's why. It's because the left has no idea how the free enterprise system works, how capitalism works, how wealth is created, why businesses do what they do. This is an idiotic idea. As you said earlier, Bill, if you want less of something, you tax it. If you want fewer employees in Seattle, tax them. Businesses respond to their bottom line. If you make it more expensive to do business in a community, you're going to have less business.
But he's saying $100 a year for employee, they're not even going to feel that.
They're not even going to feel it. It is a terrible idea. It will hurt Seattle's business climate. Oh, by the way, just as you're being perceived around the world as driving Amazon out, let's do this. And the final thing is, you cannot convince me that Seattle needs any more money. Seattle is getting a boom right now from increased sales tax revenue. They are getting a huge increase in property tax revenue from new construction. I really doubt Seattle needs any more revenue. But of course, to the left, there's never enough money for everything they'd like to do.
You know, I want to hear from you, Jessen. Because I asked Mike O'Brien about exactly that. Whether isn't growth paying for itself? We're getting all this tax income. So this is Mike O'Brien, and then we'll discuss his response.
In the last 5 or 6 years, we've generated a lot of wealth in the city. And that's great. That's something to be proud of. And I'd be really proud of it, except for the fact that at the same time, we're also creating a lot more poverty.
Doesn't that growth bring in revenues by itself in sales tax and real estate excise taxes? And is it not paying for itself?
It's doing some, but it's not covering it all.
Okay.
And part of the problem is, you know, we have lagging stuff we're working on. You know, to bring our transportation infrastructure up to this new level of employment and growth is, you know, a 10, 20 years of investments that we have to do that we haven't done for the last 2 decades.
Okay, so there you go. There's the big argument. Jessen.
So I want to embed this conversation in a little context. And, you know, first of all, in terms of growth, we've had 100,000 people move here. And so, yes, there have been taxes that have been raised, but there are more people and there's more need. need for services. Secondly, let's really talk about what the head tax would go towards, which is homelessness. We're in the midst of a deep crisis. And I would just ask everyone here and who's listening, what would it feel like to be in a tent? You know, this week is sunny, but last week it was raining really hard. And we've been in a state of emergency. But what I like about this proposal, it is putting on the table new resources right now. And so if we don't like the head tax, and hey, is there any tax that anybody loves? I would challenge our community to come up with something that's not the sales tax, that's not the property tax, because we keep going back there, and that's hitting everyday people. Then let's come to the table and figure out what it is that's going to get money into the system this month, next month, December. That's the challenge.
Okay, before we hear from Jossie, she just asked you, Chris, what's your better idea?
I saw something today that said that in the Seattle King County area, we're already spending $195 million a year on homelessness services. I'm not sure throwing more money at this issue is exactly the way to solve it. And I find it very hard to believe that Seattle does not have enough revenue to accommodate new programs. But again, the worst idea you can possibly do is to start down the road of crippling your economy by basically telling employers, we don't want you here.
The Seattle economy will never be it's not going to happen. It's almost fiscally impossible, you know, unless you're looking at a very remote period of time. Mm-hmm. You can somewhat hamper it, you know, and that might happen if you create some strictures and systems that people don't want to pay and businesses leave. Amazon's not going anyplace. However, I want to just broach this topic with, I live on the south end. I live in Rainier Beach area, right? About 3 minutes away from Rainier Beach High School. And I'm fortunate to be a homeowner. And that area is changing incredibly fast. And it's directly related to the homeless crisis here, because folks all of a sudden find themselves, they can't keep up with rents, and then they find themselves homeless. And now all of a sudden you have more people who are homeless, or, you know, they're moving someplace else. And it wasn't because of choice or agency. It was because they had to. And I have these young folks who live directly to the south of me, and they rent out properties. And I don't have the heart to tell them. I look at them and we have conversations and we might even watch football. But I don't have the heart to tell them, you're not going to be here in 5 years. But that's the truth. They're not going to, because of the way that Seattle's economy is changing. Now, that's directly correlated to what Michael Bryan is trying to do, which is let's put some money aside and create some little pockets of money so people can rely upon things. And I agree with Chris that just throwing money at this problem is not going to be the solution. But I also think that we have to do something. And what we've done thus far, which is just allowing that free market that Chris, as a former Republican, still feels so highly about, it's not regulating itself within Seattle. It's not protecting the most vulnerable. And we have to somehow create some programs that do regulate that free market and don't just let it do its thing.
Chris, the famous conservative phrase was from Milton Friedman, that the rising tide lifts all boats. Fair to say that's not happening in Seattle? All boats are not being lifted?
It is fair to say that. There's a big problem in this country with wage disparity. And if you don't have a college degree, you're really disadvantaged in this economy. I agree with all that. I just find it hard to believe that Seattle needs more money. They are flush with money. The economy's never been so good. And unlike the county, they have other sources of revenue. They get a higher percentage of the property tax. I'm getting deep in the weeds as, you know, a former local elected official.
But Jessen's big question was, what's your better idea? Look around. Look at the tents.
There's a whole bunch of things we have to do about homeless. There was a really interesting article in Crosscut this week. My boss, John Wilson, the assessor, pointed out that there's thousands of parcels out there, vacant parcels owned by the government, by King County, City of Seattle, by Puget Power, where we could put modular housing to start housing people. There's a whole bunch of things we can be doing. But just raising another tax, especially on business, is bad. And, you know, I think there probably used to be a lot of people thought Detroit's economy would never go down, or Cleveland's economy. There's nothing magical about Seattle. Just because it's pretty here, if we continue to be so unfriendly to businesses, businesses will leave. You know, Boeing makes their planes in South Carolina now.
So I think that that's a great idea. Let's put modular houses on, you know, city-owned, county-owned property. But you have to buy those houses, right? You have to pay somebody to put the houses there. And so are we taking money away from current addiction treatment services, from current supports for, you know, women who are suffering from domestic violence and are homeless because of that? So I think that this issue is a big issue, and our response has to be scaled appropriately. And so what I appreciate about Councilmember O'Brien's proposal is that he's putting something on the table. And if the business community, if others don't like this particular tax, again, my challenge is come up with something else that is not the sales tax and is not the property tax, because individuals are paying a lot. And particularly, we know that the sales tax in particular is particularly regressive. So that's the challenge. Come to the table with something else. But I believe deeply we need to scale the solution appropriately. And it is a big problem that we are not on top of yet.
Okay. Before Amazon remotely unlocks this radio studio door and walks in, I want to ask one more question about growth, because you heard a moment ago Seattle's Mike O'Brien saying that growth is not paying for itself. So my question is, here we are struggling to pay for growth, supposedly. Chris is not convinced, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Because growth prices out poor people and clogs the roads and bulldozes old houses for new towers. So what's so great about growth? Like, could our leaders have said no to growing? Did we ruin our city chasing growth? Could we stop growth? I want to know what's so great about growth.
Well, first of all, you can't stop it. Legally can't. I mean, if I'm a private business and I buy a piece of property from another private enterprise and I want to put a building there, and then as long as it comports to the government's land use codes and zoning, the government can't stop me.
So Seattle couldn't not grow if
sure.
we wanted to.
If Seattle chose to enact policies that are so discouraging to anybody coming here, they could do that. And okay, go ahead and do that and see what happens to your community over time. Growth is, it's difficult, I understand. But the alternative is a lot worse. A lot of Rust Belt cities would love to be Seattle right now.
Do you both agree the alternative to growing as we have, the boom we've had, the alternative to that would have been worse?
I think cities are about people. You know, this is a great thing that so many people want to live here. And the challenge for us is that we need to rethink the social contract so that anybody can stay. That, you know, you're not getting priced out because you can't afford to own a house or because you don't make $100,000 a year. That, to me, is the issue. You know, again, going back to climate change, which we talked about with transportation, we need cities to work, you know, for the sake of our climate and our future. We need to figure this out and figure it out really soon, because people are getting displaced right now. But to me, it is really about the social contract and the regulations and the investments that we're deciding to make. I think we should treat housing like infrastructure. Just as we invest in roads, as a community, we should invest in housing so that people can afford to live here.
The binary is laid out by Chris, whether it's unfettered growth with absolutely no regulation or no growth. That's not really the question. The question is that, is there going to be some nuanced place in the middle? Right now, I think we've seen largely the results of Seattle being, for a long time, just a small town. And for a long time, the codes and the growth management and the laws being indicative of that small town feeling. Well, when you start having more money in, you have it reflective of modern times. You have Amazon, you have real networks, you have Nintendo, you have all of these companies that have real money. At some point, you have to put regulation up. And that's not saying we don't want growth. Of course, growth is the way people work. You can't stop growth as a legal matter, nor can you stop it as a practical matter. But there are ways to consider what the human toll is. And I don't think asking to consider that human toll and having policies that are reflective of that human toll, those are in any way inappropriate, nor are they, I don't think, anti-economical. They're not something that says we hate growth. It's something that says we need to do this.
Okay.
You know, the Growth Management Act's been mentioned here. I was the chairman of the King County Council's Growth Management Committee when we adopted the 20-year comp plan, the first one under the GMA, that established the urban growth boundary and the urban center strategy. And basically, the whole blueprint for how the region would develop. And the core of that is that we wanted the urban area to grow. We wanted to see much more housing and growth and employment and high-rises in Seattle, in order to stop sprawl out to the Cascades and to protect the rural area.
Right.
Our plan is working. This is how it is. And people, I understand it's expensive to live in Seattle, but this is exactly what you're supposed to do in an urban area.
Okay, I've got less than 2 minutes to fulfill my promise of talking about Amazon's new offering. Want to get a quick take? Amazon Key. Amazon would sell you an internet-enabled lock for your door and a camera that sits inside your door. You use your smartphone to let Amazon delivery people open your door and drop off a package. You get an alert that your driver's near, and you can watch the delivery from work through your camera. Facebook page, people are highly reactive to this. Most of them agreeing with listener Chris, who says no. On second thought, hell no. Although a lot of people talking about, Jen says, I prefer people I know use my toilet, eat my food accidentally. My dogs, a lot of my dogs out the front door and use my furniture. Seattle Facebook hates this idea. Any response?
The fact of the matter is, I think privacy is already really compromised, right? We talked about this with Google Maps, whatever Amazon's Alexa, right? Alexa's in our house already.
Right.
I don't think I'd like this idea, but I think more broadly, I don't like the fact that how much of our privacy has already been infringed. We need to talk about
Amazon's that. Offering this because a lot of people are worried about their stuff being stolen off their porch.
Yeah.
Get that, but no way I want somebody opening my front door. First of all, my dog would have a heart attack, who's home in the middle of the day when neither my wife nor I are home. But I wouldn't use this service, but I understand why Amazon's offering it.
Jossie?
Quoth Chris on Facebook, yes. Hell no.
You're in the majority. We've been talking all hour long about what happened this week with Jossie Ross, Seattle attorney, host of the podcast Breakdances with Wolves. Chris Vance used to be a Republican, used to chair the Republican Party.
Yeah. Go Dogs tomorrow.
Go Dogs. And go independence. Jessen Farrell, former 46th District State Representative, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're on Twitter at KOW. I'm Bill Radke. Talk to you on Monday.